Chicago. Good morrow, world. We are Midsummer Flight, and this is Summercast. Hey, guys, it's Jules here with a very, very special guest, my good friend, Margaret Kelles.
Hello, world. It is I.
Thank you so much for joining me.
I'm so excited to be here. So excited to be doing this.
For our maiden podcast voyage pilot.
Yeah, I like that. Yes. Did you practice that? That nope. Was impressive.
Nope. And you're going to be my co-pilot for yes. Our trip through the land of Shakespeare. Now, Margaret and I met with this fun little company called Midsummer Flight. Mm-hmm. Midsummer Flight does a lot of outdoor Shakespeare in the summer. She's trying to signal something to me. You can say it.
It's not for profit.
It's not for profit, yes.
I didn't know I was going to mess up saying that, so I wanted to mouth it to you so I wouldn't mess it up.
She jumped the gun a little bit. That's fine.
I'm sorry. I just really like that part of
Well, that's the best part. Yeah. Midsummer Flight, everything Midsummer Flight does is completely free to the community.
It is.
They hop park from park in the summer. Lincoln Park, Gross Park, Tui Park. Schreiber doing free Shakespeare programming in the mm-hmm. summertime. This summer, they're bringing us Hamlet.
Oh, to be or not to be?
To be.
To be.
For me, it's to be. I don't know. So we wanted to start this podcast to sort of spread awareness of what Midsummer Flight's got going on and also connect some of the Chicago Shakespeare community mm-hmm. in one little audio bundle.
One little audio bundle. I love that. No, it's true though. I believe there's a lot of Shakespeare nerds out there. And if you are one, well then this podcast is for you.
It is. It's just for you. And Chicago is a pretty huge Shakespeare community, which is weird mm-hmm. because I don't think you think Shakespeare and Chicago go together.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I think it's great because I think that Shakespeare is accessible to everyone, and yes. if we have different companies doing it, they all have their own little spin on it, and everyone is going to be able to kind of interpret it their own ways, which I think is really cool.
Absolutely. If you hear some bumping in the background, there's a little baby that lives above us.
Hello, baby.
That is stomping the yard.
Hello, up there. Baby.
So, Margaret, let's talk a little bit about yes. how we met. Now, Midsummer Flight has been doing productions since 2012.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, they opened with Midsummer Night's Dream. Mm. But I first joined their project the next season over with Romeo and Juliet playing Mercutio. And you joined us
with Macbeth.
Macbeth, which wasn't the next, I think it was the year after next.
It was the summer of 2015.
Summer 2015. Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, so Midsummer Flight had been around for a couple years when right. I did Macbeth, and I played all the little boys, Fly, Fam, Fly, which was really fun because I got to do stage combat, and I love that Beth cast me in boy roles. That was there's nothing more fun than getting to do something that, play a little boy.
What did you learn about being a little boy?
I learned that there are certain luxuries you men have, such as not having to wear makeup. That was a real luxury all summer. I wore pants the whole summer.
No, wait, nobody told me that because I was wearing makeup all summer.
Well, you're a loss, sir. Yeah, I got to wear a cute little page boy hat. It looked like a newsie. Do you remember that?
Yes,
got to be a future king. It's great. And also the stage combat, though, that was the most fun. I got to work with a broadsword, and I had never done that before, so that was a real treat.
Yeah, it was a huge show for stage combat. Mm-hmm. It's so fun because, we rehearse in these parks, too.
Yeah.
So if you go to one of these parks, Tui, Lincoln, Schreiber, I'm going to keep forgetting parks.
That's okay.
They're all going to be up on our website, midsummerflight.com, where we're going to be at. But you'll see us there rehearsing throughout the whole summer.
Yeah.
So if you walk through a park and you see people running around chasing each other with swords.
It is us.
It is us, and we are completely under control.
And we are not LARPing.
We are not LARPing.
That is a question that we get every single summer. Are you guys LARPing?
Nothing against LARPing. I mean,
oh, not at all. It's just no.
I'll throw some fireballs if I have to.
Is that a thing in LARPing?
Yeah, you got Yeah.
That's another podcast.
Yeah, join us for our LARPing podcast next week. So Margaret and I met in Midsummer Flight's Macbeth. Yes. I was playing Malcolm.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't the first time we met.
That was not the first time we met.
The first time we met, I was seeing you in another production of Shakespeare at U of I.
U of I, Champaign Urbana.
Which was your undergrad.
Urbana, if you're cool.
Urbana, if you're cool.
Yes.
Champamba?
Champamba. Well, Champaign is known for, like, the Greek life. Urbana is, like, the fine arts. So most people would argue it's the other way around. Like, Champaign is the cool part of town. But, like, if you're actually cool, Urbana is.
Arr.
Oh. Am I right? Farmer's Market.
Yeah.
Sorry. So, yeah, we met when I was I was at U of I. You had graduated at that point.
I graduated, yeah, but Bradley. I went back to see my good friend Nick. He was in that production of
Much Ado About Nothing.
Much Ado About Nothing. He was who? He was Don.
Braccio.
He was Braccio. Oops. He was Braccio.
Yes.
And you were
Citrus.
A citrus.
Excuse me, Julian. I was citrus girl. I only managed to drop the basket of citruses twice during that run. I was Citrus Girl, but I loved it. It was such a fun play, and I was dating Nick at the time,
so that was really fun. And he was my good friend, and, you know, I met you briefly. I do remember you, though, in the show. You were a lot of fun in the show.
Yeah.
But it had been years and years and years and years.
Oh, yeah, and spoiler alert, did not work out.
Did not. Which you're all still, everyone's still very good friends.
Oh.
But, you know, I get the cast list for Macbeth and I see Margaret Kellis. I'm like, this is familiar. I think I know this person.
That rings a bell.
So I do some Facebook stalking, as one does.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh.
Up came my, like, duck face, peace sign, profile picture, and you were like, yes, I do remember that human.
So I walk into the table read, and there's some of that awkward, we're allowed to be friends, right?
Well, you thought that. I just sort of was like, Julian, I have a familiar face. I'm going to leech on you for the remainder of the summer.
The rest is history. We've been fast friends ever since.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Sitting next to each other at those wreaths, or the table work. The table work.
Works, right.
And Midsummer Flight spends a lot of time at the table.
Mm-hmm.
You'll just see piles of books in the middle of the room.
Yes, it's one of my favorite parts. I also did As You Like It, which was last summer.
Oh, yeah, As You Like It. Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
So that was, I am very fond of the table work that we do with Midsummer Flight. The way we do it, we all bring in our own set of books that we have and kind of attack the text. We work from a first folio standpoint, meaning Beth adapts the scripts, but we get them and they are still written as they were in the first folio.
Right. And for someone that doesn't maybe do a ton of Shakespeare, we're having some phone difficulties. We do a lot of, there's a lot of research that has to go into Shakespeare. Like, you'll find different translations and mm-hmm. here and there, and different uses of the grammar. So we use all of these resources to find the cleanest interpretation of the text.
Right.
And even as far as, like, the history of it, to character intentions, to just, like, what are the words written on the page.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's really unique to Midsummer Flight, although admittedly I haven't really worked with any of the other Shakespeare companies here in the city.
Well,
but
not everyone spends the time
everyone
like
everyone
kind of
has, like, the. I think everybody probably does, like, a table work thing for sure. I don't know if everybody operates from First Folio.
Yeah, I don't know, I think it's
but
a
that's something that, like, I really love about Midsummer Flight. So for any of you who don't know what the First Folio was, it was the first complete works, real complete works that was published after Shakespeare's death.
Right, that collected, like, all of the plays that had.
Yes, and they were published by two actors that were in his company. So it's thought to be the closest to what Shakespeare actually wrote, which is pretty cool. And at the time, like, this is kind of like a dorky thing, but, like, the reason why we call theaters, like, auditoriums is because you would hear it, audio. Like, you would go to a play to hear it. So that's
Isn't that so funny?
You didn't know that. And so the way that Shakespeare was kind of, like, passed around before the first folio, like, there was quartos of some of the plays, but nothing had been completely published together, but people would write it down. There'd be people in the audiences that would write it down, which is why there's so many different versions and so many different spellings
yes.
of how things are, because of the way that it was heard, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, cool. Yeah.
And a lot of actors, I find our study folio technique in undergrad or grad school.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that they go over. You'll find lots of clues in the text on where to put emphasis,
yes.
Where to breathe. Breathing is very important for acting.
Yes, it is.
I think a little bit later, we're going to do a little auditorium style text work for you.
Yes.
So you're a hardcore Shakespeare nerd.
I mean, I like to consider myself a hardcore Shakespeare nerd. However, I think we all like to consider ourselves. Meet people, though, that I'm like, wow, you're so much better at this than I am.
Well, sure,
but that's okay. So I first got started in Shakespeare when I was in grammar school. I admittedly was always, like, an athlete. I was very okay.
What was your event?
I played a lot of sports. But I played, basketball, soccer, volleyball.
Basketball. But Margaret is so tiny, you guys. You can't see her
because you're listening really, to her really voice. Rude.
But she's so small.
Not that small.
But she's got mad hops.
I was a point guard, so actually I was just fast. I was a forward in soccer, a point guard in basketball, and a setter in volleyball.
Impressive.
So, fast girl over here.
I was slow.
You were slow.
In multiple definitions of the term.
Well, if you really know me, I'm just going to put this in really fast because it is one of my claim to fames. I was Miss Basketball 2007.
Oh my goodness.
St. Clement Elementary School.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I come from a very unique, perspective here talking
Absolutely.
About Shakespeare.
You're half jock, half nerd.
Yeah, exactly. Jack of all trades. But I first was acquainted with Shakespeare. I'll never forget this. I was in seventh grade, Mr. Witt's English class. We read Romeo and Juliet.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's just very, very typical.
Absolutely.
I remember thinking wow, I get this. I understand this. And then, to be honest, didn't really pick it up until high school again, my junior year, I had this English teacher. Her name is Mrs. Mueller. Hello, if you're out there. She introduced me to Macbeth, and we did scenes from Macbeth.
Nice.
And I was still playing sports. I was doing some theater, but for the most part was really an athlete. And then my senior year of high school, I'd given it all up and was a full-time theater person.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
it's so similar for me because I think a lot of classes do that popcorn reading style.
Yeah.
Shakespeare, and everyone is so unenthusiastic about it, but I would get so excited.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I was awful. But I loved, there's something sort of mystical, if that's kind of weird to say, but mystical about Shakespeare,
mm-hmm.
where it's not how we talk now, and to really get it, you have to do a little bit more digging.
Yeah.
And I was really intrigued by that. I don't remember what my first performance of it was, though. I think I do remember being in Macbeth for the first time. But I wasn't allowed to speak. I was a percussionist.
Got it.
In Homewood Flossmoor High School's group interpretation of Macbeth, directed by Jill Bonavia and Janine Stromer. And I was only in it because I think they were doing Huckleberry Finn first. But there was something that they didn't want to do. They didn't like the script. I don't know. But we switched right at the beginning to doing Macbeth. And then I was a percussionist. I don't play any instruments.
What did you do?
I did sound effects. So I hid behind the set.
Oh, dear Lord.
And I would do sound effects. Marching or the sound of the swords clashing.
Actually, it's very Elizabethan of you.
And yeah, it was Foley work. And it was I don't know, I had a lot of fun with it. And that was I must have been a sophomore in high school.
Yeah.
And then I think the first show I did was Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Phyllis Street, yeah. The butler type dude.
Butler. Oh, I love that. That's so great.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And speaking of Midsummer Night's Dream, I told you guys we were going to get to little audio table work.
Mm.
I think Margaret and I are going to tackle a little Hermia and Helena.
Wait, am I Hermia or Helena?
You're Hermia.
I already knew that was coming. Yeah. I already knew the answer to that question. I just felt like asking anyway.
This is just a sort of demo, like what we want to do with this show. We want to get people on here doing scenes, doing sonnets, talking to us about the history. We just want this to be a platform for Shakespeare in this city.
Yeah.
So this is going to be our first stab at it to give you an idea of what we're going
for. Should we give them kind of a preface of what we're... What
well, we're going to take a quick break, and then okay. I think we'll come back. We'll set the scene, as it were.
As it were.
And then we'll dive in, and then we'll talk about how that went. All right, I'll see you guys in a little bit. Thanks. Hey, everybody. I hope you're having as much fun as we are. I want to take a little break to talk about more about what's going on with Midsummer Flight this summer. You know, this is our sixth season of bringing free Shakespeare to Chicago's parks, and we couldn't be more excited. In fact, we're going to have a kickoff picnic on Saturday, June 17th. From 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. We hope to see you there. We're going to be at 2045 North Lincoln Park West. That's going to be on Stockton Avenue between the Lincoln Park Cultural Center and the zoo. Hopefully things won't get too wild. It's going to be a bring-your-own-picnic sort of situation with some short programming, including a live stage combat demonstration and a question-and-answer session with the cast and crew of Hamlet. And like everything Midsummer Flight does, this is going to be completely free. So come on out, enjoy the Chicago weather. Well, it is still Chicago, so hopefully enjoy the Chicago weather and check out what we got going on. Now, speaking of Hamlet, here's some more information of when you can check out that production this summer. Hamlet's going to be directed by Beth Wolf, our artistic director, and it's going to be running from July 8th to August 27th. Fun fact, August 27th is my little brother's birthday. These are not related events at all. Hamlet is going to play on Saturdays at 6 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. We're going to be opening up in Lincoln Park, but in true Midsummer Flight fashion, we're going to be traveling to different parks around Chicago. We're going to start at Lincoln, we're going to go to Schreiber Park, we're going to go to Toohey Park, we're going to go to Gross Park. You have to find us at one of these parks. You don't have an excuse. There's so many options. I better see you there. You know, next month, we're going to be coming back with another episode. We're going to be sitting down with company member Elizabeth Renfro, and she's going to go over some of her musical stylings that she adds to the shows. And there's going to be live music in Hamlet and also in our productions of Twelfth Night. And all that music can be found on iTunes, and she's going to talk to us a lot more about what's going on with that. So get very excited for next month. All right, I'm going to take you back to what's about to happen with me and Margaret doing this scene from Midsummer Night's Dream. I hope it works out. Enjoy. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that little commercial for Midsummer Flight. We are in the second half of our maiden pilot voyage episode.
Not as smooth as the first time.
It's getting late in the night.
You were still really great.
And we're going to bring you a little Midsummer Night's Dream. Like I said, this is just sort of what we're trying to showcase on the show, the sort of vibe we're trying to go for. Mm-hmm. So we're going to set up this scene for you, and then we're going to dive in. So we're at the palace. It is, Athens. We are in Athens.
You're in Athens.
Right. Hermia was just told that if she does not marry Demetrius, as her father commands, she will be put to death. Ugh. You know, the patriarchy. Yeah. Yeah. It's a shame. So
it's a shame. Say it's a little bit more than that, but you know,
it is a mockery. Hermia feels similarly. So her and Lysander devise a plan, and as she's on the steps of the palace. Dude, there were no palaces in Athens.
Yeah, I don't remember it the steps of the palace part, but
But you know, we can set it wherever we want because it's Shakespeare. Because
it's Shakespeare.
And he's dead.
And we should also set up that, so if anybody doesn't know A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Right.
So there's two couples in this.
Yes.
There's Helena and Demetrius and Hermia and Lysander. And in the beginning of the play, Hermia wants to marry Lysander, but who is in love with her as well. But her dad, as you said, wants her to marry Demetrius.
Right.
And Demetrius loves Hermia.
Yeah, Demetrius is completely down.
Yeah.
But Hermia can't stand Demetrius.
Cannot stand Demetrius.
She can't do it.
But meanwhile, Hermia's BFF from growing up, Helena,
her biffle, if you will,
is in love with Demetrius. And there are hints, though, that her and Demetrius, like, had a thing.
They had a thing once.
They did some things.
It just didn't work out.
Yeah, and it just didn't work out. And now Demetrius wants.
But she's still pining.
Hermia. But she's so sad.
So that's, like, sort of the last time on Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yes. So we're at the part where Hermia has a plan to get out. So we're going to find out what that plan is. And Helena is going to reach out to her friend and tell her how sad she is.
As friends do.
As friends do. Godspeed, fair Helena. Whither away?
Call you me fair. That fair again unsay. Demetrius loves you, fair. Oh, happy fair. Your eyes are lodestars and your tongue's sweet air. More tunable than lark to shepherd's ear. When wheat is green and hawthorn buds appear. Sickness is catching. Oh, we're favor so. Your words I catch, fair Hermia, ere I go. My ear should catch your voice, my eye your eye, my tongue should catch your tongue's sweet melody. Were the world mine, Demetrius being baited, the rest I'll give to be to you translated. Oh, teach me how you look, and with what art you sway the motion of Demetrius's heart.
I frown upon him, yet he loves me still.
Oh, that your frowns would teach my smiles such skill.
I give him curses, yet he gives me love.
Oh, that my prayers could such affection move.
The more I hate, the more he follows me.
The more I love, the more he hateth me.
His folly, Helena, is none of mine.
None but your beauty, would the fault were mine.
Take comfort. He no more shall see my face. Lysander and myself will fly this place. Before the time I did Lysander see, seemed Athens like a paradise to me. Oh, then what graces in my love do dwell, that he hath turned a heaven into hell. Helen, to you our minds we will unfold. Tomorrow night, when Phoebe doth behold her silver visage in the watery glass, decking with liquid pearl the bladed grass, a time that lover's flight doth still conceal, through heaven's gates have we devised to steal. And in the wood, where often you and I upon primrose beds were wont to lie, emptying our bosoms of their counsel swelled, there my Lysander and myself shall meet, and thence from Athens turn away our eyes to seek new friends and strange companions. Farewell, sweet playfellow. Pray thou for us, and good luck grant thee thy Demetrius.
Aw, how happy some or other some can be.
Well, that was fun.
That was a lot of fun.
I love A Midsummer Night's Dream.
I think
it's, especially if you are newer to Shakespeare, I think it's such a great example of, like, every little trick Shakespeare pulls out. You know, you got your rhyming couplets. You know, the Shakespeare tends to have, there's a lot in this, but when there's a rhyming couplet, it's usually indicative of, like, and now I'm done with my thought. Boom. And like,
yeah, and the thoughts all kind of arc up. It's like especially in his comedies, you find that it's like a ball bouncing up and down between. And there are a lot of like themes in this one that are easy to grasp onto, especially for young kids. Like I said, this was like one of the first shows I did. And when we were reading through, I was like, oh my goodness. like, I know these characters. Yeah. I've been Helena.
Oh, absolutely. I know we're joking, like, Margo, you're Hermia, but, like, in my life, I am totally more Helena.
I think we all like to think we're more Helena. Yeah. But I think we have our Hermia
moments. I love that.
But there's so much to it. There's the magic and the fairies.
Yes, I love this play because, so Shakespeare writes in verse and prose. Mm. We can talk a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah.
Like his more, like, go-to verse, you'll get other versions of it, like in Macbeth, the witches all talk in trochees. But for the most part, it's iambic pentameter. So it's the unstressed, stressed.
Yes.
Syllables and
sounds like a heartbeat.
Yeah, it sounds like a heartbeat. And you get that a lot in this play. And then the minute they get into the forest, everything changes, which I think is so cool.
How it's so smartly written.
Yeah, and often, like, if the characters talk in verse versus prose, it's usually indicative of, like, their class.
Right, because the mechanicals are mostly in prose,
right?
From what I remember.
Yes, absolutely. Or, like, you know, this is super, Midsummer Night's Dream is super poetical. Like, the rhyming couplets, every single line. It's, like, usually that's indicative of love, you know.
Yes.
They're talking in heightened text because they're, like, at this breaking point, which I think is beautiful. I love this play a lot.
It's a lot of fun. You know, if you want to see us do more things like this, or if you want to interject some Shakespeare knowledge, if you are a secret or not secret Shakespeare nerd, we'd love for you to send us our thoughts. Head on over to the Midsummer Flight website and drop us a line on their contact section.
Yes.
There's gonna be some more information on how you can get in touch and stay in touch with the company after the show, but we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram. We're on Instagram.
I didn't really realize all this. I love that. All right, that.
We're there. We're in the new world. We're bringing Shakespeare to you.
Bringing Shakespeare to you. and I think that's also great because I think there's so many different theories when it comes to Shakespeare, so many varying opinions.
Mm.
And I think, you know, I don't really think there's necessarily, I've never heard anything that's could be wrong. So I love that. I love when opinions kind of clash. And so we'd love to hear your thoughts.
When it hits, it's always different. You know, you have your text and then you have your work as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And where those meet in the middle is always super interesting.
Yeah, you bring your own perspectives too.
Because there's so much to glean from the text. There's so many clues when you're looking at what words are capitalized? Where are the commas? Where are the semicolons?
Yeah.
You might not hit every single one of those things. So then it becomes the job of the actor to pick and choose, like, where they're going to use the tools that Shakespeare gave
us. Right, and I love, especially working with Midsummer Flight, that's something that we do during table work. We talk about that stuff.
Absolutely.
And I love doing that.
So when you're given a piece of text like this, so say you were going to go into a callback for Midsummer Night's Dream and somebody gave you this section that we just got. What would you do? What's the first thing that you do?
Well, I always read the play first.
Oh, you're good.
I know, but I do. I've always been told that if you can do Shakespeare, you can do anything. I truly, truly believe that because it wasn't until I started doing the first folio with Shakespeare that I started knowing, like, noticing punctuation and other texts.
Yeah,
and so many contemporary texts I've noticed, especially, you know, young girl, teenage, I get called in for a lot of teenage girls, there's often a lot of absence of punctuation, which I think is so interesting. And I notice it now because I'm so attuned to it when I pick up Shakespeare. So yeah, the first thing I do is I always read the play. For something like this, I probably would go back and definitely read the scene, get my moment before, my mot before.
That's huge, absolutely.
See what's happening, set the scene up, find out my place, what's the time, you know, like how urgent, not like, it's 5 o'clock, I mean, like, time to divulge this plan, time to get Helena on my side, you know, whatever, like, the urgency of it, what's making me begin to talk.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, and then
You always gotta start with what are you even saying?
Yeah, that's
like,
too.
Yeah, sometimes especially if it's a play that you've, because there are plenty of Shakespeare that I haven't even touched.
Yes.
Oops.
And I kind of like it that way. It's like you have your whole life to read all of them too.
Absolutely, and there's so many new things to discover, and like so many just weird plays too, which are always so fun.
His problem plays, they just bounce around the world. Like Pericles, I was talking about this with someone the other night. You were in like 10 different countries in Pericles. 10 might have been a total exaggeration, but you are booping around in that play. So yeah, that's kind of, and then for Shakespeare, I'll usually like scan it out, see like if anything, if there's like 11 beats in a line instead of 10, that usually like to me means, oh, she's off her verse. She's a little bit crazy in this part.
Yeah. And you can use all of those things. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Good. Do you have any like go-to texts? I think one of my favorite, and I'm not going to remember the name of the author, but it's called Willpower. Ooh. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
It's called Willpower, like acting Shakespeare in 10 days.
Ooh.
And it's like 10 lessons, 10 like pretty short lessons on like what to do when you're given a piece of text.
Ooh, I love that.
It's super good and it's super easy to read. It's not very dense.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun. I recommend that one. Do you have a text that you go to?
Yes, I like, this is one I used in college. It's called Shakespeare's Words. It's by David Crystal. And it's literally just like a dictionary of all the words. But what's so great about it is that like there's varying definitions of the words. Like he might use one, it differs from play to play. So even if you think you know the meaning of the word, you can look it up in this book and no, in this particular line, it actually means this.
And this will be good. This is good homework for our listeners. All of you need to find the definition of lodestar.
Yes.
And if you...
We did not look that up.
If you tweet us...
That's another thing I do.
If you tweet us with the answer, then you get a special... You get a special shout out. So tweet at Midsummer Flight with the definition of lodestar. That's a fun thing we could do.
Yeah, I kind of love that. We can bring in like a Shakespeare weird, because he made up so many words.
So many words.
So many insults.
And so many words that are now part of our common language.
Yes,
which is a lot of fun too.
He like invented the knock knock joke.
Yes.
Porter and Macbeth.
Oh, yes. I was in that play with you. Yes. I didn't know.
Beth taught me that one, actually.
Oh, Beth Wolf, I don't know if we've mentioned Beth Wolf.
Oh.
Beth Wolf is our artistic director, our fearless leader. She created Midsummer Flight. She wanted to bring free Shakespeare to the parks of Chicago. A lot of companies do free Shakespeare in the park, but I will say, I don't know if anyone does quite as much or reaches quite as many audiences as Midsummer Flight does, except for maybe Chicago Shakes, which I know Chicago Shakes has a pretty huge tour that they do.
Mm-hmm.
We offer more of a guerrilla style.
Yes. We're more like, here are four boxes. But, here, you know, admittedly, though, like, we use them really well. And
we
I
always
think,
use
like,
the space and we use the parks. It's nice get to become sort of part of that park community.
Yeah, I love
while
it.
While we're rehearsing,
and then
there.
we revisit those parks. So every summer, they're like excited to see us. Like the kids at TUI every summer are always like, they're back, which I just love. And I love the way we're able to kind of use our simplistic set. Like I remember when I was playing the Macduff son. Remember we used the boxes and it became like this like play area for
Oh
me.
Yes, because you know these boxes they're
get,
sort
like,
of
really creative.
How big are they? They're about like the big size of like a coffee table.
Yeah.
And they're solid boxes and they're not light, but we move them around the stage and we use them to create like sort of the suggestion of areas within the park, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we sort of created this like area for Macduff's castle.
Yeah, I loved it. And I remember just like, and there's a line about Macduff or the son being like, I'm a bird. I don't remember the exact line, but I remember like crouching on it. It was like my playset.
Yes.
So I love that we're able to find ways. And, you know, I think if we're able to imagine it really well, this world, we're kind of allow the audience to do the same thing. And there's something really special about that.
It is special.
Because that's kind of how they did it when Shakespeare's texts were being
I mean, you get
done.
To be outside in the summer, come together as a community.
Absolutely.
And like, just like watch something amazing happened. Weather pending.
Weather pending. I know. We've had some crazy weather.
And sometimes it's amazing when we have crazy weather, too.
Yeah.
So please, if you can, if you're in Chicago, come out and join us in the park this summer.
Did we say what we're doing this summer?
Yes, we're doing Hamlet, directed by Beth Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and then...
The Prince of Denmark.
The Prince of Denmark.
I love Hamlet.
And, you know, we also started the tradition of doing a show at the Lincoln Park Conservatory.
Mm.
We've been doing a remount of last year, or this past holiday season, mm-hmm. we did a remount of Twelfth Night, mm-hmm. and we should be back again this conservatory.
So magical. You have to go. It's so, so magical in yes. that space, especially in the winter. It's like, I don't know. It's really great.
So if you stay tuned here, we're going to tell you where to find us throughout the year. Mm-hmm. We always have events coming up. And, you know, and we were just talking a lot about text work, and we were, I asked you earlier, your first encounter with Shakespeare. Why still do it? It's so old.
I know. I don't really, I don't have like a concrete answer for you. Mm. I just remember being like 16, 17 years old. But I think although I had read Romeo and Juliet, I think like when I read Macbeth in that English class, it was just like, oh my goodness, what is this? And I just loved that I could relate to something that seemed so bigger and larger than me. Like, yeah. I just always felt extremely, I still feel this way, extremely empowered.
There is something very powerful about
there
it.
There is. Yeah, and, absolutely. Like, while Shakespeare has his, like, has his gender roles, and, you know, there's the ingenue, the leading lady, whatever you want to mm-hmm. say about it, I think, like, it also, the way that it's written is also so accessible to people regardless of like where you came from. And I think that's right. so important.
And there's so many things that you can do to experiment.
Absolutely.
Especially like young companies that maybe can't pay for rights for like the newest of shows.
Oh, out there. Yeah.
You know, you can that's revisit these texts and but still take them to brand new places,
mm-hmm.
Which is amazing. And people are always hearing Shakespeare for the first time, mm-hmm. which is also amazing.
I love that. And you talked about how like the verse is a heartbeat.
Yes.
It's like you literally speak to the rhythm of what, like of your heart. I don't know. I just think there's something so
it does something to you listening to it and saying it. Yeah, yes. absolutely.
I love it. So, and I also think that with the whole gender role, something that I love that Beth has done the last couple of years is the gender bending, because I know for myself, I don't know if I would have necessarily related to Hermia growing up, you know, sure. like the young lover, like something like R&J, I don't know if I would have related to Juliet, you know, I think I probably would have related more to like the quirky sidekick, like Benvolio. You know?
Absolutely.
And I think that's really incredible that you can find other ways to relate to it. Because,
there's so many different, yeah.
You know, texts don't always give that to you. TV and film, they don't give that to you very often.
No, there's a freedom in Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And we hope you come out to see kind of what we're talking about. Thank you so much for joining
me. Thank you for having me. I could talk about Shakespeare all day, every day. I just love it.
Well, if you want to hear us talk about Shakespeare more, be sure to stay attuned with a Midsummer Flight. Join our mailing list. We're going to send you some more information on how to stay in contact with us coming up in a little bit. And from all of us at Midsummer Flight, good evening, Chicago. Thank you for joining us. Thank you so much for joining us for this pilot episode of Summercast with me, Julian Strope, and Margaret Kellis. We hope you'll be back to listen to some more episodes. We're going to try to be doing this on a monthly basis and see how that works out and go from there. But in the meantime, if you want more information on Midsummer Flight, how to get involved, how to contact us, head on over to midsummerflight.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Midsummer Flight, and you can like us on Facebook if you want to be our friend. I hope you do. There are lots of ways to get involved with the company. The best way, you know, Midsummer Flight, everything we do from this podcast to our kickoff picnic to our shows is completely free to the public. We're a 501c3 non-for-profit corporation, and all contributions are completely tax deductible. So please, if you can donate, or you know, our best advertisement is word of mouth. Tell people about the company, tell people about the podcast. Anything you can do can go a long way to helping keep all of our programming free and keep us doing what we love doing so much. Thank you from all of us at Midsummer Flight, and I will be talking to you soon. See ya.